Just Speaks edition of World Crisis Radio. This is your host, Webster Tarpley, speaking from Washington, D.C., and it is Friday the 13th, Friday the 13th of February 2015, but we're going to proceed anyway, since superstition goes with relativism, subjectivism, and those other aspects of late imperialist thinking, which we here emphatically do not share. Now, we have two big events this week. We hope to have a number of guests, and if all goes well, they will be materializing as the show goes on. But you got two things, right? You've got Ukraine, the Ukraine crisis, and you've got Greece. And we hope to get a report from Athens. You've also got some stuff here going on, but we always approach, we grab these things by the handle of what we propose to do about them and subsume the details into a plan of action. And that means a concept. So we're attempting to do it that way. Now let's go in medias res. This week at the State Department, the redheaded bombshell Jen Psaki was talking about the Minsk Accord, the 18-hour marathon session in Minsk, Belarus, with our friend Lukashenko, President Lukashenko of Belarus, getting some media exposure, right? He's the one with capital controls and exchange controls put in and seems to be doing okay. That 18-hour session led to what's going to become quite possibly a ceasefire, maybe Sunday night, maybe it'll take longer, but jaw-jaw is better than war-war, as Winnie used to say. So Jen Psaki was ranting about the need for implementation, right? You got to deliver. Words on the page, one thing. Deeds in the real world, another. Wow, real world. She conceded the existence of the real world. Anyway, this guy Matt Lee, who is not exactly reliable, but from time to time comes up with some useful objections. This redhead was going on about, oh, those Russians, those rebels, they better deliver. They better observe what they signed. And the AP foreign affairs reporter Matt Lee then asked him, well, what about Ukrainians, right? What about them? Shouldn't they also be punished? Shouldn't there be sanctions or something, some kind of retaliation against them if they violate the accord? And she's indignant, and she says, well, that's, you know, that's absurd, because everybody knows that Ukraine, Kiev, has scrupulously observed the preconditions of the earlier September 2014 Minsk Accord. Well, Ms. Psaki, don't look now, but we now have Dmytro Yarosh, the head of the right sector, the biggest Nazi of the bunch, a Nazi fascist from Kiev, actually from Lviv. And this Yarosh is now saying in public with statements that he will not respect the Minsk Accord. What does the State Department say to this? Try to get the Twitter brigades going on this. Hey, Jen, you said that it was metaphysically impossible for anybody on the Kiev side, the Poroshenko side, to violate the Minsk Accords. But it looks like Yarosh is saying and doing exactly that. And it's words on a page and his gunmen. And this is already it's a semi-official kind of statement, because you'll remember the way the Ukrainian Soldateska operates is the so-called Ukrainian regular army, who are time servers and, you know, garrison troops, whatever they are, they stay outside of these towns and they use tanks and artillery pieces and these Stalin organs, right? These rocket launchers. They shoot up the town, but the ones who go in are the fascist fanatics. Those are the right sector and these fascist groups, the Donbas battalion, the Dnipro battalion, the Azov battalion. They go in. This, by the way, is exactly the way an SS Einsatzgruppe operated in World War II. You'd have the SS, they'd do the shooting from afar, right, bombard the place. The ones who went in and actually did the killing got real blood on their hands were the Hilfswillige, the people who were volunteering to help, willing to help. Hiwis, the Hiwis or Hilfswillige went in. So the Hilfswillige in this case are the right sector. They are SS tools in this case of this fascist or neo-Nazi clique in Kiev. So get on the case of Jen Psaki. She, of course, is hated and notorious around the world. Now, Merkel and Hollande, after a long time where they were essentially supinely accepting the dictates of the State Department about sanctions and all the rest, right? U.S. having really no interest to sacrifice. Therefore, the U.S. eager to fight to the last European when it comes to economics. Merkel and Hollande, I think they could see that if they didn't do something that they could put there as a simulacrum of a modus vivendi, that is to say some kind of a deal that would allow the situation to go forward, that the pressure on Obama to arm the fascist forces would become overwhelming. So they decided that this had to work. They had to come up with something. And Putin was willing to join in. Poroshenko, obviously, at different times, at 7 o'clock in the morning European time, Poroshenko came out and said, oh, this is awful. The Russians are oppressing us, right? We can't do this. This is no good. Just a couple of things to consider. If the U.S. says, oh, we're going to arm the rebels, we're going to arm the Ukrainian government, right, the coup forces, in effect, the Maidan, the Kiev forces, what's going to happen there is very likely, it's perfectly feasible for Putin to simply preempt the whole thing, saying, you're going to arm the Ukrainian army? Well, we'll make sure that by the time your shipment gets here, there's no more Ukrainian army to arm. Okay? So that's one obvious version of this, right? You're absolutely playing with fire. It is an act of war, and we have this interesting article from a number of think tanks in Moscow saying, in effect, that this will be considered an act of war, and there will be asymmetrical responses. What might an asymmetrical response be? One of them seems to say, well, Russia could join in with Iran and Syria and launch those forces in a proxy attack on Saudi Arabia. Why not? And let the U.S. Deal with that, right? That would obviously upset the financial as well as economic apple cart. We also want to note the presence of the French philodoxer Bernard-Henri Lévy, BHL, this warmonger. Remember, he was the one who blew hot air into Sarkozy's ear in March of 2011, saying, Sarkozy, time for France to take the lead in bombing Libya, leading, of course, to the current chaos. So this guy is a human rights figure. He is a philodoxer. Look that one up. Not a philosopher. Doesn't love wisdom, but is in love with opinion. An opinion in the Platonic scale is the lowest form of human mental activity. Understanding is better, reason still better. And now we'll get the second segment, what to do about this. It's time to end the economic sanctions. Back in a minute. Friday the 13th, 2015, in February. So, here's what needs to happen right now. Even Kerry, in an unguarded moment, right, since his mind is like a rag bag, he sometimes just says things, time to end the sanctions. Now that this deal is in place, whatever this is, let's not wait around for it to get into difficulty. Let's build on it. Time to end the sanctions. Hey, Hollande, remember, 2 days before Charlie Hebdo, Hollande was saying the sanctions against Russia have to end. Well, now that Putin has come forward with this constructive attitude, time for those sanctions to end. It goes without saying, no weapons for the Ukrainian fascists. Not one bullet, not one bolt, not one can of oil, nothing. They get nothing, and no GIs. And how can you have American forces training fascists from the right sector and these other neo-Nazi groups? The United States, one thing we have going, this was the preeminent anti-Nazi power. Never allied. No Ribbentrop-Molotov pact, no appeasement, no nothing. Roosevelt's quarantine speech, Chicago, 1938. Look at that. So the U.S. relatively okay in that regard. Now what are we going to do? Retroactively endorse Hitlerism through this group in Ukraine. No, no, no. One thing we obviously have to think of, the CSCE 1975 Helsinki Accords, right, that said that the borders in Europe were final, right? This is in lieu of a peace treaty after World War II, which had never occurred. The problem with this is the formalism of borders is okay, but there's a content aspect, which is what government? If you have a color revolution overthrowing the government, right, as in the case of Ukraine 2004, Ukraine 2014, the color revolution is an act of war. And obviously that means that whatever government remains within those borders is not the legitimate government. So the Helsinki provisions have to be expanded, I would say, in order to take care of that situation. We have Senator Imhoff. Senator Imhoff is proving the statement by P.T. Barnum that there's a sucker born every minute. A group of fascists from the Ukrainian Rada came over and gave him some pictures. Oh, look at these Russian tanks crossing our borders. Problem was, it was the border of Georgia 2008, not today. And you'll remember in 2008, Cheney wanted to bomb that tunnel. That would have been a one-way ticket to World War III. Just what we needed. Robert Parry, has better late than never, has discovered that the Donbas, Dnieper, and Azov battalion have Nazi insignia, swastikas, Wolfsangel, and the rest. Correctly and usefully takes to task Rick Lyman, nomen est omen, right? His name is his program. Rick Lyman of the New York Times has been writing from Mariupol as if this were the last holdout of democracy and human rights. And of course, it's not. And this place may also fall to the Russians in the next couple of days, the pro Russians. Croatia had said that Croatian citizens were indeed part of this Condor Legion, foreign legion, fighting for Kiev in the Azov battalion. But this Tusker, the elephant in the room, Tusk, the former Polish politician, he denies it, right? And he's now the president of the European Union Commission. Now, we need to also look at what Putin had to say. Putin, this is the famous remarks. This was not the best night of my life, but the morning is good. We were able to resolve the main issues. Why did it take so long? Because the Kiev fascists, who are leaning, they're based on fascist gangs, they all of a sudden won't talk to the representatives of Donetsk and Lugansk. So that had to be done with the four heads of state and government in one room, and then the OSCE contact group in another room, and functionaries shuttling back and forth, you know, as everybody says something. So every time somebody makes a statement, it's got to be translated and taken into the next room. So ceasefire to begin at midnight on February 15th. That means then and not before. Withdrawal of heavy weapons, artillery pieces and so forth, big self-propelled howitzers and other stuff. That goes back from the line of control as it is right now. The Donbas militia, as he said, the Donetsk and Lugansk People's Republics correctly say that what they did was in response to the constant shelling of the Kiev authorities, the aggressive actions of the Kiev authorities. But now the Donetsk and Lugansk were able to mount an offensive and encircle a group of 6,000 to 8,000 Ukrainian forces. And the demand from the Donetsk and Lugansk people is that those encircled have to lay down their arms and go home. But of course, the danger is that other fascist forces outside the pocket will try to break the encirclement, and then the fighting will go on. And that's got to be blamed on the Kiev side. So if the troops are really surrounded, then they will try to break free, while those who are on the outside will try to arrange for a corridor for their trapped servicemen. So this somehow, this issue was dodged. So what do we get out of this in general? The solutions to these situations have got to be imposed by a concert of the great powers. It would be much better if the U.S., Russia, France, Germany, and some others, the more the merrier, could join in imposing a solution. We're hearing about, oh, the Ukrainians have a right to self-determination. The Ukrainians have this and that. The Ukrainians do not have a right to threaten the peace of the world with their little issues, especially when they're largely fascistic. So therefore, this situation has to be imposed. And when we look a little bit further away, this is the Netanyahu problem, the parallel lives of Plutarch, Poroshenko, Netanyahu. Netanyahu believes that it's his right to fight to the last American against Iran in some new cataclysmic Middle East war. This must not be allowed. The general outlines of the solution for the Middle East are known, and the general outlines for Ukraine are known. In the case of Ukraine, it is Finlandization or Austrianization, that is permanent neutrality, actions to discourage Russophobic hate propaganda on the internal front, the non-tolerance of Russophobia. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, Webster Tarpey here in Washington, D.C. Now, we want to go quickly to Athens to get the essential weekly update on what's going on with Syriza. Right, this week we had the European Finance Ministers meeting, the Eurogroup, with Varoufakis representing Greece, and we've also had the meeting of the heads of state, heads of government, this time with Alexis Tsipras being there. We've had Juncker and Moscovici shooting off their mouths. But we want to get an idea from Michael Chiotinis in Athens what it all means. So, Michael, please, you have the floor.
Hello, Webster. Well,
thank you for being with us again.
Thank you very much. The previous government in Greece actually tried to implement a scorched earth policy. They tried to set a limit, time limit, for the new government to just to set a blackmail and took an extension of the current program by 2 months. And as Tsipras said, when he went and on his tour of talking with other leaders, they told him that they offered the previous government a 6 months extension, but Samaras, the previous prime minister, insisted on 2 months. That was Samaras trying to implement the kind of scenario that I was talking about last week or the one before, about having Syriza fail in the negotiations and bringing back the old government by a sort of scorched earth policy. Now, what Varoufakis is aiming at right now is a bridge settlement. Many people right now are trying to tell us that Syriza is trying to sell us over, and they're going to betray us and also those sort of things. But what Varoufakis, I think, is aiming at is a bridge between now and the holistic solution for Europe, as we have talked, as we have talked about. And right now, that's Varoufakis is trying to give the Europeans is trying to give Schäuble the rhetorical win over the some reforms, as they call them, as they call it. He talks about 70% being good and 30% being bad, something like this. But this is actually Varoufakis trying to give them a rhetorical win in order to take to gain the actual win.
And so it's a face-saving device. Let Schäuble save face, but let him make concessions on the substance.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Save face. And he's trying to get a bridge settlement until the last of the end of August. And he hopes that until the end of August, he will try and mobilize forces, progressive forces in Europe, and try to put the program in implementation. We have talked about a solution for the whole of sovereign debt in Europe. We talked about the New Deal for Europe, public investment, and of course the debt restructuring and all those sort of things. So that I think is what Varoufakis is aiming at, but he will not take it until the very last minute, in my view. They will not come to an agreement. Many people panic because they say, well, there's not an agreement. There is no agreement. There is no agreement. Well, there won't be an agreement. They're trying to push it up until the last minute, because that's what rhetorically the most easy thing is to do that. The easiest thing is to do that. So I don't think if we're going to get an agreement on Monday, on the Eurogroup on Monday, I think they will get an agreement. They will have an agreement, but it's not 100% certain. But they will get an agreement at the very last moment at which they can sell it to their own parliament and avoid the default of Greece. Because you might say, why do you fear a default? Why do you fear a debt moratorium? Well, we don't fear a debt moratorium, but it's a lot easier, it's a lot less messy if we do it that way, because the way the debt has been legally structured by the previous governments is very, very difficult to put in order. And the current government doesn't want to go into these legal battles and all those sort of things with the British law. The debt is under British law and all these kinds of things.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Look, I noticed the World Bank today gave $2 billion to the Kiev clique. But I do not, on the positive side, Kamenos, right, the independent Greeks, the defense minister, he said something saying we would get financing from anybody, and including the U.S. And rhetorically, at least, that's my agitation here, is the Federal Reserve financed all those European zombie banks in 2009. They could easily extend a few billion to Greece and help out that way.
Yes.
With no conditions. 0%. 0%, as usual.
Well, the new foreign policy of Greece is trying to recognize that we live and we are going to live in a polypolar world, a multipolar world, and they're trying to play one against the other.
Absolutely. And that's the way to do it, right? Get between the blocks and extract concessions. So this is basically the see you in September policy. See you in September with a definitive thing. And that's, of course, in Europe, that's the way things work, right? The summer is essentially everything shuts down. And yes. Then you have the rentrée politique in September, and it makes a lot of sense. So what are you getting? Ultra-lefts, Trotskyists, Maoists whining that they're not happy?
There are some voices, but they're trying to be cool for now because they need to see first what the deal will be on Monday or whenever it's going to be. But I think they will hold themselves until summer.
And the Euro group, once again, is the finance ministers of the European Union, right? Or of the Euro, actually, the Euro land.
The Eurozone.
Eurozone.
Yes. The ones have the finance minister of the Eurozone.
We saw another demonstration this week with a big sign calling on Merkel to think about all the terrible things that she had done or Germany had done.
Many cities in Greece and many demonstrations all over the world, I might add, supporting the Greek government in the negotiations.
Right.
We had Samaras at the European People's Party signing an anti-government agreement on how the new government is trying to break the deals and all sorts of things. He's in panic. He's being, of course, his party is trying to get him off from the presidency, and he's in panic. But Merkel will back off. They can't afford to break the Eurozone. It's either Merkel is looking at either a smaller hegemony over Greece and more viable over the Eurozone, Europe, or none.
Okay, Michael, we got to go. But Varoufakis is supposed to be coming to Washington. Let us know when Varoufakis is coming to meet Lou. And we'll be there to greet him.
And we'll have news next.
Okay. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, Webster Troplieb in Washington, D.C. Now we have a treat, honor, and something very interesting. Friends of this broadcast will remember Pilar Baselga, Baselga. In Madrid, Spain, and you'll remember we got the lowdown from Pilar on what this Indignados phenomenon was at the Puerta del Sol back in 2011, and that, of course, was the model for the failure, really, of Occupy Wall Street. Now we have the Podemos party. Yes, we can. And the news hook on this is that Pablo Iglesias of Podemos is going to be hosted by Amy Goodman, right, funded by the Ford Foundation, of Democracy Now. Hope is changing sides, understanding Spain's political change. This will be in New York City at the Prochansky Auditorium, City of University of New York, CUNY Graduate Center, 365 Fifth Avenue, Tuesday, February 17th, next Tuesday, 1 to 3 p.m. And there will be an informational picket line of the Tax Wall Street Party to tell you a little bit more about Pablo Iglesias. And part of it's going to be what Pilar is going to tell us right now. So, Pilar, the way I understand it, Podemos has benefited enormously from Soros Media. And maybe you take it from there.
Well, I don't know exactly if it is Soros. As far as I know, the TV channel that has been supporting these Pablo Iglesias and the party is La Sexta. And La Sexta is Rothschild. I don't know if Soros is somewhere around. You know, these people don't always play openly. You know, they have other people before them, so we cannot know really who is behind. But it's, to me, what is very, very strange, because I run for the elections myself, you know, in May, last May, for the EU elections, and I was in the party of the judge, maybe you know, Elpidio Silva, the one who put in jail a banker Well, a bankster, okay. I would say.
And so, tell us in Spanish, so the I name was of the there, party in Spanish that you're looking for.
Yeah, it's red, R-E-D. Red is like a web, network. A web, a net, yes.
Okay.
Yes, but it means the purpose of this party is to fight against corruption and to really start really what is democracy, because we are not living in a democracy at all. This is a dictatorship, but not only in Spain. I mean, Europe is a dictatorship. So it's not that we are against the system, it's that the system is against us, which is very different.
Okay, but listen, you know? In terms of Podemos, right, the pedigree,
yeah.
I'm told that, I know that I looked up on Huffington Post. Huffington Post, in all of its forms, has devoted about 8,500 articles to Iglesias Podemos. You compare that to Syriza, 2,500, despite the fact that Syriza is now the government of Greece. So it looks like there's a Huffington Post, which is from the Soros orbit. I'm also told that Mediaset, meaning Berlusconi, is pro Podemos, and also Atres Media, another financier controlled thing. But the idea is, I take it your thesis is that Pablo Iglesias, this is not authentic, right? This is not real. And you got to tell us why not.
Yes. Well, because I was saying, yes, I don't think it's real. But you know, in a way, I hope that I'm wrong. I don't want to be right about this. I would love that this is a real party that is going to bring a change, that they are going to be young and new and fresh and not corrupt and okay. But because I was inside during these elections, I could see perfectly that they had a support from the media that nobody had. This was the only party who had a support from the media, the big media, the mainstream media. So in January, Pablo Iglesias was just unknown. Nobody knew who was this guy. Then in May, he started to be very famous. And in October of the same 2014, he is almost the president of Spain. I mean, this is not possible. That's why I say it's not genuine. It's not true. It's manipulated from behind. But I don't know who is behind and what is the purpose. Because socialists and PP, the popular, the right wing, is they are very, very nervous against them. And I think it was today or yesterday, the Minister of Finances has declared that he's going to look in detail if number two of Podemos, which is Monedero, is perfectly with his tax contributions, you know, his taxes. If it's,
right. And Monedero, what I understand about Monedero is that foreign contributions from Venezuela and Latin America come through Monedero. I'm also told that there are people, that the Hugo Chavez people in Venezuela say that Monedero has betrayed them, took their money, and then turned against them in public. Is that correct?
Well, I don't follow exactly what is the relationship between Monedero and Venezuela, if he has betrayed them. But I know that he was there because before Podemos existed, Monedero was already in a way preaching in favor of Chavez. There are lots of YouTube's videos where you could see him speaking beautifully and saying that it's the future and blah, blah, blah. So I don't know what he did afterwards, but it's evident that these people gave him a lot of money. First they said 400,000 euros. Now they said 700,000 euros. And well, okay, so imagine, but there, in my opinion, there is no crime in it. I mean, it's not illegal to work for a
country. No, it's not a crime, but the betrayal, that according to various things that I've seen, the Chavez loyalists in Venezuela are saying, Monedero, you took our money, and then you stabbed us in the back by attacking us in public. Let me ask you another one. One of my sources is telling me that the goal of Podemos, this operation, let's call it the Iglesias, because maybe they could get rid of him. But the idea being Podemos is the key to breaking up Spain. There's the secession movement of Catalonia, Barcelona, and so forth. And this will not work under existing governments. But if the government becomes Iglesias, then there's going to be a tendency for the Spanish state to fall apart. How about that?
Oh, of course. Of course. Of course, this is one can be one of the goals. But Spain really is at the edge of a catastrophe. I just cannot believe how bad everything is done by everybody. I mean, the socialist leader of the, you read about that maybe the other day, 2 days ago, he has fired the candidate for Madrid, for the next elections for Madrid, okay? So he has completely broken in two parts the Socialist Party. And so who benefits? Of course, the right wing and Podemos, because the socialists are now in a civil war inside. They are divided. So somebody is trying to divide everybody, you know, to divide the Spaniards, to divide the parties themselves. I mean, it's very sad. And then
let me ask you another one. I've been listening to your No Morir Idiota. Your very interesting broadcast there in Spanish on your blog, right? No Morir Idiota. Don't die as an idiot, right? Don't die as a fool. Get smarter. And it's very good. Along with your two friends there. Hang on. I'm going to come back in just a second, but I want to ask you about this idea of Felipe González in the late Franco era, and now this Iglesias as the next controlled politician to be foisted off on the people of Spain. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to this edition of World Crisis Radio, and as we said, we are honored to have with us Pilar Baselga, of Madrid, Baselga. This is where you can get the truth or a refreshingly different take on things like the Indignados, who turn out to be not what you thought. And then again, Pablo Iglesias. Now, we ought to separate Podemos. Podemos is a real thing. There are real mass forces in motion. But this leader that's been foisted on them, Pablo Iglesias, right? Maybe if they could get a better leader, the whole thing would become more authentic. Pilar, I lived in Rome in the 1970s, and I used to go and cover the congresses of the Italian Socialist Party. And in the corridors, I would always run into this Spanish guy. And later on, I said, my God, that's Felipe González. He became the Prime Minister of Spain. And I know in your No Morir Idiota group, you put out the idea that the Spanish oligarchy, they prepare leaders in advance. So by the time we get into the early 1970s, it's clear that the dictator, Francisco Franco, is not going to be around forever. He's going to be gone. Franquismo is going to be gone. And then they have Felipe González of the Socialists ready to go. Now, the idea that we hear is that the Socialist Party, right, PSOE, and the right-wing party, the PPP of Rajoy, they're going to be gone, and who's going to represent the oligarchical and banking interests of Santander and Bilbao and all this? And is that the story with Pablo Iglesias?
Well, who knows? Who knows? I really don't know. You know, Felipe González, he was backed by Willy Brandt. They decided that Americans were going to back with the money, the PP, and the Germans with Willy Brandt were going to back with money the party, Socialist Party. But it's like two faces of the same coin. They all work for the oligarchy of the bank. So it's still the same. So I don't know really what is going to happen, because as you say, you have several things. You have the leaders, and then you have the mass that is behind. But, so who knows what can happen? When you were saying that Monedero had betrayed Venezuela, what I think is that Monedero realized that if he wants to win, he has to completely cut, interrupt, finish, no more Venezuela relationship. Otherwise, he will not do it. So as they really want the power, who knows if they are going to do to change the agenda of their masters? Who knows? Maybe this could be also possible. I don't know if you found. I wrote another article where I say the future of Spain is in the circles. The circles is the name given to the little groups of Podemos all over the country. You know,
the locals, so, the local organizations, the local chapters.
That's right.
Of Podemos. Yeah,
that's
those
right.
Those are
it's
real.
Called Círculos. These are real, and these people are very, very angry about against all the normal parties, even the Communist Party, the Izquierda Unida, no, the Left United, the current Communist Party, which is not called Communist anymore, it's Izquierda Unida, IU. So everybody's very disappointed. Sorry?
The post-Carrillo Communists.
That's right, exactly. You know very well. So these people are very angry and they really want to change things. So I think it's not going to be easy to stop the people. But who knows? I mean, because the mass, the mass can be very easy to manipulate. I saw that on the Occupy movement. It was unbelievable how they were manipulated and nobody could see it. And I said, but look, this guy with his suit, he's coming with his big car, Audi car, he's coming here every evening to direct you. And you had the people, young people with, you know, looking very like hippies and so. And you had the leader of these groups in the square. They were dressed in suits with beautiful cars. So it was very, very surprising that people, when they don't want to see, you know, they don't see. So I hope people will see and will take the opportunity they are having to really do another politics. Other politics.
Let me ask you, Pilar. I listened to the speech by Pablo Iglesias at the Puerta del Sol a week ago Sunday.
Yeah.
And I found this to be completely empty. If you compare that to Alexis Tsipras, Tsipras and the Syriza party had 40 substantive, hard-hitting, class-based, mass traction economic demands when they ran even in 2012, right, including take over the European Central Bank and use that to finance governments but also to finance infrastructure and so forth, right? With Iglesias, I started counting. He talks about Merkel. He never mentioned the International Monetary Fund. Never. He does not really talk about the European Central Bank. He never mentions NATO. He doesn't mention Santander or Bilbao or these huge banks that dominate Spain. And it's all this stuff about our dreams, right? We dream, but we take
absolutely.
Our dreams
yes,
seriously.
Yes.
And I don't know what he thinks. He says the reference for dreams is Don Quixote. No, I thought it was Calderón de la Barca. I think this speech was written by foreigners. I think that speech was written by a foreigner, wouldn't you say?
Well, you know, he spoke in some interviews about going out of the NATO. And the attack was terrible because people saying to him, you're talking like a child. This is impossible. Spain cannot get out. We have no army to be out of NATO. This is the problem when you are, that's why De Gaulle didn't want to be in NATO and had the atomic bomb. Okay, we don't have the atomic bomb. So French could say goodbye, but we cannot. We are just like a carpet for the NATO.
Right.
So in my opinion, what he is doing is giving very simple ideas so everybody agrees, you know, a populist, very easy ideas so no enemies can come out. And they are, that's why saying general things and not specifically, not to frighten. This is what I think this is a strategy, not to say too much and stay in the general ideas and we are going to change the world.
Let me follow up here. Iglesias talks about La Casta. Okay, once we hear La Casta, this is the language of Pepe Grillo, right? This is Grillo 1,000%. And when they say La Casta, they mean politicians. That's what it means in practice. So the bankers get a free ride, and they target the politicians. Now, this is, if you look back to fascism, right? Fascism, the goal of fascism was always take over the parliament, take over the government, because they're not going to touch the bankers. So if you don't educate people about the sinister role of the bankers, and you go with this cheap populism about anti-politician and how they get, you know, privileges and so forth, then you've committed yourself to nothing. And that's what I thought was important about that Puerta del Sol speech. He doesn't promise to do anything, nothing.
I agree with you. But I think I agree with you. It's empty. And another thing that I said on my radio show is that as they were accused not to have any economical project. No structure.
No economic program,
strong and structured by people who know what this is. So they said, we are going to work with Vicens Navarro. And then Vicens Navarro, a few years ago, wrote a book, which the introduction was written by Noam Chomsky. Wow.
Okay. Okay. For us, that's all we need to know. I'm afraid we got to run now, Pilar. That's our two segments. So thank you very much. We'll have you back soon.
Thank you
for coming. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. Now, we had been waiting all during the program for Reverend Edward Pinckney to call us from the Marquette prison up on the shores of Lake Superior, the upper peninsula of Michigan, the American Siberia, where he is now, he's been sent. But for some reason, it hasn't worked. Probably some kind of harassment or other untoward event. So we're lucky, though, we can turn to Daniela Walls. She, of course, the chairwoman of the Tax Wall Street Party, the heart and soul of the effort to mount an effective legal defense for Reverend Pinckney, as well as a political defense. And we're looking forward now to the court proceedings on February 24th. And Daniela has actually got some interesting details to report about this network of people in the Berrien County, Three Oaks, and the Benton Harbor area that have done so much detrimental to the community and detrimental to Reverend Pinckney. So, Daniela, welcome. And you
Thanks,
have some
Webster.
News for us. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I have a lot to get through, a lot of news. It is harassment what they're doing to Reverend Pinckney there with the phone. And I know he wanted to get through, so I'm very sorry about that. Some of the stuff our investigative team at the Tax Wall Street Party have put together this week is new to Pinckney's original legal team. This is what is new at the moment, this whole angle of the Featherbone Restaurant and Three Oaks. Let's start there. The owner of the Featherbone Restaurant, I said, is Denny Grosse, G-R-O-S-S-E, who is Sharon Tyler's boyfriend. We are in the process
Sharon
of investigating.
Sharon Tyler being the county executive.
Clerk.
The county clerk, sorry, the county clerk.
Who was a member of the prosecution, who is now the head of the Republican Party in Berrien County. Okay? So we are in the process of investigating. So she has a boyfriend, Denny Grosse, and he's in local government. I'll give you the details of how. But this is not a casual relationship. This is almost a celebrity relationship in this area. There's many news articles of Sharon Tyler and Denny Grosse vacation here. They're local celebrities. Okay, so this is a well-known relationship. So we're in the process, and he owns a restaurant, which is the most frequented haunt in Three Oaks. It's the Featherbone Steakhouse. Everybody goes there. Everybody knows about it. And he owns that. So we're in the process of investigating which members of the Freeling family work at the Featherbone and have worked at the Featherbone. We have a list of Freelings that Denny Gross has employed. The connection we've been trying to make has obviously been between Gail Freeling and her saying she doesn't know who Sharon Tyler is. So Sharon Tyler goes to the Featherbone so often that it is said, quote, she holds her office hours there. Denny Gross, yeah, Denny Gross, the owner of the restaurant, is the former village president of Three Oaks, where Gail is currently the treasurer. They did not overlap, Denny and Gail. The current village president, however, is Denny Gross's cousin, Dave Gross, and we have a lot of pictures of Gail and Dave together. We even have them on stage making a speech together. So we're going to have to subpoena some of these people. And we're going through the process. We have a long list of who we're going to subpoena, one of them being Denny Gross. Denny Gross is currently on the Urban Planning and Development Board, and Gail is also currently on the Parks and Recreation Board in the same town. So they overlap there, the two of them. So they overlap currently these committees, on these committees. So they're both a part of the Three Oaks city government. And especially when it comes to development projects, and there's a picture becoming clear that this is a cabal of people in the Harbor Shores project that Reverend Pinckney was protesting. And they're all involved in this quote unquote urban redevelopment. But what's really going on here is what we've said, the land grab and ethnic cleansing. I've talked about this whole thing on my radio show of public-private partnership, and basically
your radio show, of course, the United Front Radio.
Yeah, thank you.
And people should go and listen to these. They're extremely good. Do take some time and listen.
Thank you. I did an episode on this public-private partnership. But basically the idea here of urban renewal is that Sharon Tyler's professional background – she's in office now, but her professional background is in urban renewal. She's been to all of these, been on all of these city and county boards for redevelopment projects. And her boyfriend, Denny Gross, is also an insurance agent. Gail Freeling is an insurance agent. If you look at her Facebook page, she's a State Farm insurance agent. Denny Gross is an insurance agent. Now wait for it. Gail is not an insurance agent in her hometown of Three Oaks, but 45 minutes away in Benton Harbor. The big project there in Benton Harbor is the Harbor Shores project. So we are now investigating what insurance projects, what projects Gail was might have been involved in with Harbor Shores. Basically, all of these people in Southwest Michigan who have been involved in the Get Pinckney for years, we're finding are now involved together in real estate development, insurance, and finance. And everybody who is part of the Get Pinckney operation, even including the previous judge who put Pinckney in jail for quoting the Bible, that Judge Butzbaugh, if you remember, They're all involved in financing and insurance and development of Harbor Shores. Judge Butzbaugh was a real estate agent for Harbor Shores. He was the guy who got commissioned for selling those condos in the development. And so Buttsbaugh's in a typical example. Pinckney was also going after Hightower, Mayor Hightower. Hightower is an investor in the Cornerstone Alliance. And the Cornerstone Alliance is the private part of the public-private partnership that brings you Harbor Shores. And Harbor Shores, so people know, they can look it up online. Just go to Harbor Shores, Benton Harbor, Michigan. There's a website that outlines it all. But Harbor Shores is the PGA golf course and waterfront residential community that's being built in Benton Harbor. And Pinckney was against the project because they stole a bunch of the public land. That was the big outcome of putting in the emergency manager, was that they stole public land and gave it to the developers of Harbor Shores. What we think this Get Pinckney operation, when I say we, I mean the research that's coming from Jeffrey Jackson, also in Kyle McCarthy. They've been working around the clock on this. So what we think this Get Pinckney operation is now, not just simply a bunch of people who are friends or people who are motivated by racism, but of course that plays a big part of it. But what we see this as now, as the pieces come together, this is a financial conspiracy of local, well-connected individuals who are, oops.
Hang on. We have another segment. We're going to get you back in a couple of seconds,
okay.
Daniela. Hang on. Back in World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Topley here in Washington, D.C. We're on the line with Daniela Walls, the chairwoman of the Tax Wall Street Party. Let me do what Pinckney would do if he had been able to be with us today. We were expecting him, but the call has not come. The defense of Pinckney depends on funding. And what I urge everyone to do is go to the relevant website. This is BH Banco. So BH as in Benton Harbor, and then BANCO. And that's the website where you will find a PayPal right at the top of the page on the right-hand side. Please go to that PayPal and make a generous contribution to the legal defense in particular of Reverend Pinckney. You can also send contributions to Reverend Pinckney, P-I-N-K-N-E-Y, 1940 Union Street in Benton Harbor, Michigan. Benton Harbor, Michigan, 49022. And you find that address also on bhbanco.org. So, this is the centerpiece of the legal defense, and Daniela Walls has been working on this and getting excellent results, as we're hearing. So, Daniela, you were telling us about this clique and how it all centers around the gentrification and, indeed, the privatization of a public park for people of modest means to go and be able to enjoy Lake Michigan, right, in the summertime. No, now it's got to be reserved for oligarchs and predators. So please take us back to your analysis.
This is the Get Pinckney clique. We call them that because this is the same group that got up and said, we got Pinckney. This is that same room of people. And it's very hard to do this on the radio because there's so many detailed elements. We're making right now flow charts and trying to make visuals. We're making 18 by 24 cards for the court date for the 24th. With showing how Gail is connected to all these individuals. So I'm doing my best. Sorry if it might get tedious, but this is the best way.
No, it's highly interesting. This is real sociology is what you're hearing here.
Okay, good. So we see this now as the pieces come together that this is a financial conspiracy of local, well-connected individuals who are all trying to get their piece of the action with the gentrification of Benton Harbor. Benton Harbor had the nicer beach that was the public one you were talking about. Most members on that jury knew what their job was, especially the lying juror, Gail Freeling. Reverend Pinckney was famous in the area for protesting this land grab. They all knew what they had to do to win favor with Whirlpool and the Upton's and the others, the big players in this. These are small areas, and everybody, and these are famous individuals. So now we have to consider, as we investigate further, whether Gail had some kind of kickback arrangement as an insurance agent there in Benton Harbor, and what project she had with the Harbor Shores development. What insurance contracts was she getting on the Harbor Shores project? We have to subpoena people and investigate more to get clearer on this. Maybe rival insurance agents, because these are individual franchises, these are individual operators. So we need to maybe go to another insurance agent in Benton Harbor and say, hey, why is Gail on your territory? So that's what we're up. That's who we're trying to pull in now. The appearance is certainly here that these people are all colluding. Basically, this is a financial cabal, and Gail is a big part of it. Everybody who's connected to Whirlpool and local government is either involved in the Cornerstone Alliance, which is an investment fund, or they're piling onto Whirlpool's investment in Harbor Shores, or they are involved somehow in the financing, insurance, and real estate of Harbor Shores. Harbor Shores is being built on the wreckage of Benton Harbor. This is how it came about. they stole Benton Harbor's land park in the emergency management process and gave it over to this development. All of the profits are going to local political figures like Gail and Sharon Tyler and these types, and people who actually, and the people who actually live in Benton Harbor are being run out or jailed. So this is gentrification at its absolute worst, which in this case can be called ethnic cleansing. If the Tax Wall Street Party and Reverend Pinckney had the paintbrush instead of this financial cabal, the optimal way any gentrification would have taken place would have been to start with Whirlpool. You would want to bring back the jobs to the area that they shipped overseas, then use century bonds for things like the water treatment plant, if you remember that issue that Pinckney was citing, and the other, and infrastructure would be built with public credit and owned by the public and supporting the residents. That treatment plant was built with a private infrastructure bond where the interest on the bond is $700,000 a year, and that is the same as the Benton Harbor annual budget deficit. So this idea that Benton Harbor is bankrupt is based on the fact that they had a perfectly balanced budget, and now the private financing of that water treatment plant is putting them in the red. They use that then, that imbalance, to jack the people's water bills up and thus run them out of their houses because they couldn't pay their water bill. So it's not just Harbor Shores. This cabal calls it them urban enterprise zones. They are trying to bring back business to Benton Harbor and lure them back by saying they don't pay property taxes. And the reason, which in some cases is fine with smaller businesses, but the reason Pinckney was going after Hightower was because they wanted to have a ballot initiative to put a 1% tax on Whirlpool's income, and Hightower was blocking it. So that's what I've got for this week. This is turning out to be a financial cabal that's colluding.
So the bottom line of this is, if you dare to make somebody like Whirlpool pay not even their fair share, but a token 1% payment to the local community, right, the setting where they're making all this money, then they'll come after you and they'll try to frame you up. And if you try to run a recall election, then you're going to be essentially railroaded, framed up, and sent to prison. And that's the human rights issue, right? That's what the United Nations Human Rights Council is going to hear about, is hearing about. The Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, of which the U.S. is emphatically a signatory, the Helsinki Accord of 1975, right? This has been used to browbeat Russia, but it's going to come home to roost here over the Pinckney case, and indeed the Organization of American States, all that brouhaha about human rights violations. Well, once again, the U.S., you can see the speck in the other guy's eye, but you can't see the beam in your own eye. So this is the hypocrisy of the human rights apparatus. So we're going to bring that to their attention, too. And all sorts of governments, right? Any government in the world can and should, must, call in the U.S. ambassador, say, what are your explanations for this outrage of framing people up, the black community being oppressed in particular, but it's a class-based thing, too, in Benton Harbor, Michigan.
Our Vienna local, where Laurent Coley is working hard on this document to get it to other foreign locals with party lawyer Jeff Nixon. And there's no rational reason in a rational world that Benton Harbor should be bankrupt. It didn't need to be considered a bankrupt. There were options. The membership of the Tax Wall Street Party and the United Front Against Austerity is now snowballing because Syriza put fighting austerity in the last few weeks on the scoreboard in a big way. And I was saying the other week that this slow process reform stuff and WIMP stuff has to go out of fashion, and people need to demand that we provide for the general welfare.
Absolutely.
So email taxwallstreetparty at gmail and say, I want to join. Hundreds of members are coming.
Okay. Thank you, Daniela. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Toplieb in Washington, D.C. Now, this thing with Ukraine, this is now too close for comfort. It's time to take stuff very, very seriously. I see my friend Tony Gosling of Bristol, England, United Kingdom, is noting that this situation with Ukraine could easily incinerate the planet. That's what's at stake, right? You're not dealing with defenseless Iraq or defenseless Afghanistan. You're dealing with Russia. It's extremely formidable. And this is what has to be understood, right? And there's no need for this. And indeed, there's every reason to be on the side of Putin against a bunch of unreconstructed Nazis ruling in Kiev, right? As we see now, this guy Yarosh, let's see if they round him up. Do they arrest him? Probably not. So here's what I suggest. We have Professor Stephen Cohen, and in the battles of the last 6, 8, 10 months, or actually the year, in the year since the coup d'etat known as Maidan, right, the coup d'etat against the legal internationally recognized government of Yanukovych, bringing in the Yatsenyuk and company, and now Poroshenko. Cohen has stood out as the most reasonable of the scholars, people who can get on at least some television. He was, for example, on Larry King, now on RT, but also on John Batchelor, right, the sort of intellectual neocon that you can hear in many places between like 10 o'clock and midnight or thereabouts, depending on where you are. You can look those up. Stephen G. Cohen, I think. You have a couple of other academics like this. Mearsheimer, right? People who remember Mearsheimer and Walt. I think Mearsheimer is at Chicago, Walt is at Harvard. I hope I have that right. Mearsheimer did an op-ed in the New York Times in the past week or two where he also says, do not, repeat, not arm the Kiev fascist clique. So that's important. Now, what should happen? Cohen, when he made an appearance at the Russian contact, Russian studies and Russian contact group in the Hart Senate office building last June, talked about the fact that the new Cold War is here, but the institutions that were important in avoiding adventurism and apocalypse in the old Cold War are no longer here. And he talked in particular about the American Committee for East-West Accord, which he described as representing certainly academics, journalists, opinion makers, but at the same time also industrial interests, commercial, banking interests. Pepsi-Cola was big in that regard, and there were others, right? Eaton, Yale, and Town, right? That's where the pro-detente forces actually got started, was people who wanted to have business and make money, and that's better than war. So we need a new version of the American Committee for East-West Accord. In order to do this, you've got to be able to be respectable, at least in the eyes of the mainstream, whatever that means. But you've got to also be able to call together a significant international conference. You've got to bring people from Russia. You've got to bring pro-détente forces, Germany, Italy, France. That Jacques Sapir would be important. Bring them together. Now, who could do it? Stephen Cohen is former professor at NYU Princeton, can get on the media, and lo and behold, he's married to Katrina VandenHeuvel of The Nation magazine. If you want to write to her, I know her handle on Twitter. It's at Katrina Nation, at KatrinaNation. So The Nation, right? She's Katrina Nation, all one word, nothing in between, all small, all lowercase, and so forth. And what the only thing that I can do, without wanting to be mentioned, because don't mention me, time to go forward with a wave of opinion to Katrina Nation, and indeed to Stephen G. Cohen, if you can find that, former professor, maybe by way of NYU or by way of the department there at Princeton, that somebody has got to take the lead in convoking a conference of this caliber. Could be done probably in May, June. That would be, a reasonable time frame. But whatever time frame is possible. And the organizing process for such a conference would already begin to impact public opinion. And we know people like Edward Lozansky And his group have been active in trying to maintain a dialogue, and the Russian-American Goodwill Association, and there are any number of others. We've got to somehow mobilize against the madmen, against the lunatics, against the brinksmanship of people, again, willing to fight to the last American. So I think that's an important task, and I hope that people will see what, begin to look around now and see what you could do to make that happen. There's got to be a new version of the American Committee for East-West Accord, backed up by powerful substantive interests, right? The car companies, for example, are supposedly the ones who have the biggest stake in U.S.-Russian relationship at this point. Great. GM, Chrysler, Ford, get busy and assert a rational business interest of production and making money, production and employment. Great. Against the lunacy of the elites, against the Victoria Nulands and the Kerrys and the rest of them. So that's one. The other thing is Kamenos, the Greek defense minister, right, the right-winger from the independent Greeks, he pointed out it's perfectly feasible for the United States to finance Greece. Yes, if the Federal Reserve put out a line of credit, $27 trillion for zombie banks only, and billions and billions of that went to foreign zombie banks, hey, how about a few billion? Not even trillion, but billion. How about 5 billion, 7 billion for Greece that could become a part of this bridge loan, right? Get us to September and indeed beyond, and do it the way you did it for those zombie banks, 0% and long maturities. So they'd say, well, of course, Barclays Bank was going to be around, or Societe Generale. The Greeks, as far as we know, this civilization has been around for something like 3,000 years. So there'll always be a Greece. And if you make a loan, if you come forward as a friend in need, then that's going to be important, right? If you don't want Greece to pass into the Chinese orbit, dear Wall Street oligarchs, the time to do something about that is now, because otherwise you're going to see the Chinese in control of Piraeus and Thessalonica and other key ports, absolutely critical ports. Right? Look at the history, say, even of World War I. Thessalonica plays a huge, huge role. So isn't it time to keep Greece in at least in some situation of equilibrium? Not that they have to sell out to only one foreign power. Give them a choice, right? Let the Greeks play one side against another. So start putting that out. The United States under Kerry and Lew seem to be transfixed, poleaxed, completely paralyzed. It's time to move this stuff in the direction of helping Greece, right? And rewarding the Greek people for a very, very sensible vote that they've made, that austerity simply does not work. And remember, money from the Federal Reserve is not borrowed from China. It's not tax money. It's the money the Federal Reserve creates out of thin air, as they should, in order to keep production going. Factories and unemployed workers, put them together. Greece needs, obviously, a whole new infrastructure. They need to become the world leader in some critical area of scientific or technological leadership. So, those two things. The new American Committee for East-West Accord, and do something for Syriza. We'll see you next week on World Crisis Media.